From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we plunge on through the brutal summer here in the Sacramento Valley. Oh, it's not that brutal. And plus, the Diocese of Sacramento stretches all the way to the Pacific Ocean, all the way up to Lake Tahoe. So, I mean, it's not brutal up at Lake Tahoe. It stretches all the way up to the Oregon border. So a lot of beauty out there, and hopefully you're all getting out and enjoying it. I love the summer, so appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad to welcome in Paulette Wiley, who is the executive director of the Bishop Gagos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento. Paulette, good day to you.
Hey, Bob, it's so good to hear your voice and to be back on the radio with you again.
Yes, yes, and indeed, it's been a while. a lot has happened in our world since the last time we talked, but first we have to know if the Bishop Gagos Maternity Home is going to have its annual dinner.
We sure are, and you know, last year's event was such a success, and we had such great feedback. We said, why reinvent the wheel? So we're going to be back at the same place down there at our mom's palace.
In Elk Grove.
In Elk Grove, yes. We've invited back the same caterer. We had people raving about the food.
It was a delicious dinner. It was a great dinner.
No, it was a great dinner. And, you know, so what was really unique is they do it's just either a meat entree selection or a veggie. And right. So you actually get tri-tip and grilled chicken. So
I know. It was a feast.
It was a feast. So, yeah. So not changing much of anything, really, you know. Our ticket prices are going to stay the same, much unlike all
You are the only the nonprofit having a banquet that is charging the same price this year. Everybody else, it went up.
I know it. Well, you know, every dollar counts, and it's really a moment for fellowship. It is a fundraiser as well, but we really hope that, you know, people can come out and join us, and so we really are trying to do what we can just for that opportunity to get as many people out to share the evening with us. Because it's such a beautiful opportunity for our residents to see our supporters and for our supporters to meet them as well. And so I just think it's so important that everybody gets to be eye to eye and meet one another and sit down and share a meal and an evening. So, yeah, so we're keeping the price the same this year.
So the date is?
It is going to be Sunday, September the 11th.
So always, as always, the second. Somebody asked me about 3 months ago, and I said, I'll take a wild guess that it's going to be Sunday, September 11th, because you're very smart to always be on the same weekend or the same day, whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday or Tuesday, to always be on the same day. Then people they go, oh, I think this is about the time the Bishop Gagos, you know, I'm not going to get married on that day, or I'm not going to go on vacation on that day, or whatever it is.
That's right. They know that it's coming up, and it is. It's the same Sunday after Labor Day every year. So, so that's when it is, Sunday, September the 11th. We're down there at our mom's palace and event hall in Elk Grove.
Yeah, and that last year was the first year there, and it was an excellent venue. They took care of people well, and they had plenty of parking, and everything flowed very nicely.
It really did. It was a really great spot, and so it just felt like a natural thing to say, hey, why not just do it again?
I've always wondered about these event centers. I mean, is there enough business to, you know, I mean, I know that that they don't have a Bishop Gagos Maternity Home dinner every week, you know, so
right.
it's like I always wonder. I guess they must do weddings and all sorts
Other
of events.
Corporate events,
probably retirements.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I imagine so. So, yeah, it'll be a good time for sure.
Now, but you have a different, they don't provide the food, is that correct?
Correct. They're just
they're just they're the facility, and they provide all of that, and then you get you decide. I mean, you could have a potluck, or you could have a caterer, or you could order 40 pizzas or something. You can do whatever you want to.
That's right. It really gives you a lot of leeway and flexibility. Or on the contrary, it gives you a whole lot of
headaches.
You know, trying to deal with a bunch of different vendors, but it is really nice, you know, to be able to set that up and do what we need to do. And we get the help, you know, we get the help from the Lions Club did our bar last year, and they're going to come out and do it again. And so, and like I said, Anderson Family Catering, they're based out of Woodland. And so they're going to be doing our food again.
Good.
Yes, they are. So, you know, we stretch it throughout the diocese, just like, you know, like you were saying. So yeah, it'll be a fun time.
So it's Anderson Family Catering. That's good to know.
Yeah,
it is
good. Give them a little plug.
Yeah, well, I live in Yolo County, so I like it when you pick up a Yolo County and a great Holy Rosary Parish there in Woodland. And,
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we're excited to be able to share that with everybody, and we hope that, you know, again, we're keeping that ticket price at $85 and for singles and per person, and so we're just hoping everybody can make it out again this year and celebrate with us. You know, we're coming up on our 30th year.
Is it really?
Gallegos. Yes, we were founded in 1992.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's our 15th annual dinner. You know, we had a little hiccup with the pandemic, but our 15th annual dinner and our 30th year of operations. So, kind of a big deal this year.
Yeah, and I've seen this dinner grow every single year.
Mm-hmm.
For years, it was at the Dante Club, and then was it 1 year at McClellan at the event center?
It was only 1 year at McClellan's event center.
And then this will be the second year at Armand's Palace. Wow.
Yep, that's right.
I like having dinner in the palace. I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so regal.
Yes. Yeah.
We're so
Maybe we should crown a king and queen or something. So I'm sure there are people listening right now saying, Bob, what is Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home? What's this about?
Well, you know, like I said, we've been operating for 30 years now in the Sacramento area, and we're a shelter for homeless and pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
And the women, when they come and stay with us, you know, it's an opportunity to help them change their lives and as well as the future for their children. And so they come to us, and we can provide them shelter, rides to their doctor's appointments. We provide clothing if they need it, food and camaraderie. We link them with other services and community partners for counseling and classes for domestic violence and substance abuse and we do parenting classes, and, you know, we opened in 2020 our transitional living home. So for those women who need some extra time, they can apply for that program as well and even stay longer and, you know, reenter the workforce or pursue further education, whether that means, you know, completing their high school diploma or, you know, doing some trade school work or even doing college coursework. It just gives them an opportunity, you know, to make a change, a generational change, right? We can change the lives for our future.
So you're really dealing with the whole person and each person it's not, you know, one size does not fit all. You're dealing with unique individuals who all have their unique needs.
With all their unique needs and all their unique goals, and, you know, meeting each individual person where they're at, and hopefully being able to show them what their potential is or remind them what their potential is, you know. I think for so many women, you get caught up in the day-to-day survival. You don't even dare to dream what could be possible.
Yep.
And so hopefully when they come to Bishop Gallegos, it's a deep breath for them to take a moment and not have to worry and be able to dream and dream big for themselves. and for their children.
That's so well put, Paulette. It's like we all, if you have a warm bed and enough food in your stomach, you can dream, you know.
Right.
And if you don't, it's real hard to dream.
It's so true. And, you know, it's what we do is very different, you know, than a soup kitchen or, you know, and other programs that can feed and help so many people at one time. You know, it's different because we really are case by case, person by person,
right,
and invest a lot of time because we're hoping that change is permanent. You know,
we're
hoping that it's not just a Band-Aid.
Right.
That they, like I said, they have an opportunity to set some goals and to start down that path and achieving those goals.
I mean, imagine how difficult it is to be homeless and pregnant. I mean, almost by definition, you don't have a job.
Right.
You don't have a home. You don't have any support system out there in most cases. And now you're pregnant. And yet these women want to have their babies.
And that's right.
Against all odds.
You've said it, against all odds, you know, and just to imagine for those of us who have been pregnant or, you know, have loved someone who's been pregnant,
right,
you know how uncomfortable you are, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know how uncomfortable and how difficult it can be. And like you said, you know, being alone and just trying to worry about your own safety and survival and having this person, you know, that you have to protect. And being so vulnerable, you know, the stressors involved in that, you know, alone, it's just, I'm sure, you know, it's overwhelming at times. And I think, you know, sometimes when they come to Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home, it is that moment of, I think there is that moment of, like, this is too good to be true. Like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah,
And it does take some time to adjust, you know, especially with women who have been out on the street and been on the street for a lengthy period of time. It's something hard for some people to understand that, you know, being inside and having a door or having, you know, your own bed, you know, it is just foreign. And so it can take, you know, some time to adjust, and we're happy to be able to walk with them and to help them, you know, make those adjustments.
You know, I mean, the Catholic Church talks, you know, I even have a program titled, you know, Walking with Women in Need. And boy, you guys are doing it.
We're doing it. You know, and it is rewarding work. It is hard work. But it's such a privilege, you know, to have the opportunity to meet these women and to hear their stories and to be able to witness, you know, their strength and their determination and you know, see their potential and watch them develop and blossom, you know, and grow. It's just absolutely amazing, you know, the transformative love. You know, God's transformative love is in action at Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home, and it's a privilege to be a part of it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's... I always tell people, if you've never been to this dinner, make this the year you come, because I mean, not only are you, you know, raising money for a great cause, but you you will hear the stories from some of these women.
That's
and
right.
In many cases, you'll see some of their children, and you'll see, they'll tell you where they were and how difficult their lives were. And how they have been transformed, and it's clearly by the hard work of you and your staff and your volunteers and all the people who contribute, etc. But it's also the grace of God that and you can see it at work in these women. And I mean, to hear their stories, and I've heard them now for about 15 years, and it's different. It's different every time. It's unique every time. And there's never a dry eye in the house, and yet it's a fun evening. It's not it's not some sad and, you know, teary. It's a joyful evening, and it's also just a lot of fun, because these women are full of joy, and they're full of the love of God.
Yep, full of joy and hope.
And hope, you know, and that, yeah. And boy, you know, you take hope away, and things are hopeless. And you give people hope, and it makes all the difference. And I just really encourage people to come. And the other thing is, you're a nonprofit. You're not a government agency, and you rely on the goodwill of your donors. And
right, we are completely privately funded. We take no public money whatsoever. So it really is. When I say every dollar counts, every dollar counts, and it's appreciated.
Yeah, and it is interesting, because the work that you do, you would be eligible for various government grants. You just would be, mm-hmm. because you're doing great work in the public service, and there are all kinds of nonprofits that do take either federal money or state money or even county or city money, and mm-hmm. and you folks have chosen not to. For a variety of reasons, but it gives you the ability to do what it is you think needs to be done without a whole bunch of rules that you have to follow, and not that necessarily that the rules are bad or anything, but it allows you to really concentrate on the task at hand.
And it allows us to be able to maneuver and to answer the call when it comes.
Right.
And not have to cut through any red tape and worry about obligations and how to go through things. So it really does give us that maneuverability.
Yeah, you don't need to double your staff just to deal with the state funding.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's always a great opportunity to hear those stories. The women's stories are better than anything. I think that whole evening is like so wonderful to hear where they've been and where they're going and to be able to check back in and to see their progress. It's a great time, like you said.
I know you always have a great silent auction too. Do you need people to donate gifts for the silent auction?
We do always have the silent auction. Anytime anyone's interested in making a donation to add to that, we are happy to take those donations. I actually picked one up last week. We had a couple of $50 gift certificates from Topgolf out there in Roseville. People, whoever hears whatever, they can accumulate, definitely give us a call, and we can make arrangements for it to be dropped off or picked up or however we can do it. So we're more than willing to help. And we've got some great prizes for our grand raffle.
You always have, that's right, the three great prizes. Is it three again this year?
Yep, three again this year. We're doing that first prize again as a $1,000 Home Depot gift card. A lot of people have really liked that. We have a charming cottage weekend in Hope Valley. It's a two nights at a beautiful private getaway. That's perfect any time of year. There's hiking and fishing just outside the door, or with a short drive, you can go skiing, gambling, or enjoy the water sports down at South Lake Tahoe. And then we're doing a wine tasting two-pack. And right now it's going to be, I believe, it's a local winery in the Sacramento Valley and a Napa Valley winery. I don't have the exact details of the wineries yet, but it's kind of a battle of the valleys.
I want to win the third prize.
Right?
Yeah, I wouldn't know what to do in Home Depot. My wife would love to win the Home Depot.
I bet she could have a list.
Yeah, yeah. But my daughter, who is now just finished her freshman year in college at UC Santa Cruz, has come to, I think, every single one of these dinners. And in fact, when she started at Santa Cruz last September, she said, as soon as you know the date of the Bishop Gallegos dinner, you tell me, because I'm putting on my calendar.
And well, I hope she'll be there again.
Oh, she
this
will.
Year.
She will definitely. She will definitely be there. And I remember years ago, she was probably 5 years old, 6 years old, something like that. And they were drawing for the some of the beautiful baskets. There was a raffle for some of the baskets as well, you know, that not the, the three grand prizes, but and I think it was probably Bishop Wiegand at the time. And and he was up there and holding the, you know, spinning the wheel to make sure everybody trusts the bishop, of course. And and then he says, how about we get somebody in the audience to draw the ticket? And he points at Emmy, all 5 or 6 years old. And she just bounced up to the deal, pulls out a ticket. He reads it. Emmy Dunning. She pulled her own goodness. Name.
That's so great. I bet she was beside herself.
She was.
Great.
Yeah, she thinks raffles are the best thing in the world.
Heck yeah.
That was easy.
That was wonderful, right? Well, hopefully she had a great time her first year as a banana slug. So I look forward to seeing her hearing all about it.
Yeah, indeed she is. Just had a great first year down there, and it's just, but boy, she's excited about this dinner. In fact, she's asking me if there are ways she can volunteer there when she's home for the summer. So,
wonderful! I'd love to have her.
Well, I will have her. I will have her get in contact with you because she thinks the world of you and the home. So,
like I said, I'd love to have her help. She's a wonderful young lady.
Yep. It's
really is.
We're very, very, very lucky. So how can people sign up, or if they, like you say, if they have something they want to donate for the route, maybe like you say, maybe you have a mountain cabin you want to donate to the silent auction,
right.
A weekend or something, or the whole cabin permanently, you know, whatever.
Whatever you got.
We're putting our cabin. I just saw it was, I think it was in the B, but it was for sale at Lake Tahoe. An estate, and it was $64 million estate. I thought they probably charge you just to look at it, you know.
Right, totally. I'm sure you had to qualify. Just to walk in.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if anyone's interested, if you're interested in the dinner, you can always go online and check out our website, bgmhsacramento.com, and all the details for the dinner will be on the website. You can give us a call, 916-395-9370, extension 105, and leave a voice message. If you have a donation that you'd like to make for the dinner, one of either our staff or a volunteer will get back to you. And that's really the best way to get your information and to reach somebody.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
You know, Paula, you may one day have to change the name to the St. Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home.
I know, right?
Yeah, like, that's it's in the works.
It could be any time now. You know, I found out this summer, digging through my things and kind of sorting and reorganizing my home, I actually found the program for my confirmation at Holy Family Parish out there in Citrus Heights.
Wow.
And for the longest time, I thought Bishop Quinn celebrated my confirmation, and I was incorrect that it was actually Bishop Gallegos.
Oh, wow, because you just sort of looked up who was bishop at the time.
Right.
And
right,
it was Bishop Quinn, but Bishop Gallegos was an auxiliary bishop.
Yeah, and
wow.
On my program with my name in it, it was there was celebrant.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. My mom was like, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Who knew? I thought, oh my gosh, this is so cool.
How special. And now look at what you're doing. I mean, that's with God, there are no coincidences, but
that's right.
That's a good one for sure.
Yeah, I thought so. So I was really excited to have that tie because, you know, I never thought I got the opportunity to meet him, but apparently
you did.
Not only was it an opportunity, it was a sacrament that I received.
Yes.
So
wow, that's
an amazing discovery.
That is superb. That just made my day hearing that story. That's that is wonderful.
Yeah,
give that website one more time.
It's bgmhsacramento.com. work.
Very good. And a phone number?
916-395-9370. Mm-hmm.
Very good. 916-395-9370 and bgmhsacramento.org.
Yep.
Paulette, always a joy. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure, before the event, get all the last-minute details. But for right now, get your tickets, and if you've got something you can donate as well, that'd be great. Sunday, September 11, I'm presuming 4 or 5 o'clock, something like that?
5 o'clock social hour, 6 p.m. dinner, and 7 p.m. program.
Very good, very good. Mm-hmm. And all at Arms Palace.
And as usual, our very own Bob Dunning will be our master of ceremony.
Does he know that?
I think he might.
Well, it's a joy. It's a complete joy.
Always fun to be here with you, Bob. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again real soon. And thanks. Just God bless your ministry and all the great people there that you're helping and all your great staff and volunteers.
Thank you, Bob. God bless you and all of our listeners out there.
Thanks so much, Paulette. That's
thank you.
Paulette Wiley, who's the executive director of the Bishop Gagos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento. And boy, they do great work. And, people in this day and age, and we're seeing, the divide in our country, and people talk about being pro-life or pro-choice and on and on and on. And no matter where you are on that, these people at Bishop Gagos Maternity Home are providing choice to these women who are really in a difficult, difficult situation. And homeless and pregnant, and they are providing a home for them, a family type atmosphere, helping them with way more than just feeding them and housing them, helping them get back on their feet, helping them get jobs, helping them get job training, helping them get education, if they have substance abuse problems, helping them with that. On and on and on, and the stories you hear of their transformation. Sometimes people say, "Oh, you can't change a person very much." Well, you will see that indeed, they have changed a great number of people over 30 years, and have become very productive and contributing members of our society. But more than that, have become outstanding human beings. So it's a great, great event. If you've never been, you are more than welcome to attend, and you will find that it's a meaningful evening. Bring your kids. It's great for them to hear these stories as well. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society, and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Kevin, for that Deacon Kevin, for that wonderful introduction. Well, we are just pleased and honored to welcome in Dr. Corey Novak, a specialist in a lot of things. Corey, good day to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
You are calling in from, or we're calling you, from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
How's Pikes Peak looking today?
It's gorgeous. It's a clear day, 70 degrees, just perfect.
You're kidding. And have you been to the top?
I have. I grew up in this area, so many school trips to the top of Pikes Peak.
My wife and I were visiting Colorado Springs just for one day, visiting relatives. It was like a reunion kind of thing, and I learned there was a road to the top, you know, and I couldn't get anybody to go, so it's still on still on my bucket list.
Well, come out and visit, and we'll go.
Okay, all right, you got a deal. That's great, Corey. We could spend the rest of the day reading your resume. You have such a varied background. What would you describe? What would you describe your occupation and your avocation as?
Well, I would say that I'm first and foremost an advocate, mm-hmm. For compassion. And then my job is working, I consult primarily in healthcare and end-of-life care for underserved populations. So not only do I work with prison populations, but also Native American tribes and other kind of populations that people don't always think about when you think about underserved.
So I noticed that... you did a postdoc on end-of-life care and aging at Stanford, with the School of Medicine there. Now your doctor is a PhD, a doctor of philosophy. You're not an MD.
Correct.
And you're in what field is the PhD?
Human services and gerontology.
Very good. Very good. So let's talk, if you would, about aging and end-of-life in the Department of Corrections.
Absolutely. You know, not a lot of people love talking about death. You know, it's one of those things that people invite me to parties and I start talking about what I do, and suddenly people walk away from me.
They show you the door?
Yeah, it's like, ooh, who's a girl talking about death and being in prison and getting old? And, you know, it's not exactly a party hotspot when I'm around. But, you know, I just have really found that, you know, not only do people not like to talk about things like death because it's frightening for many people.
Sure.
But then you start talking about people who are marginalized and often forgotten, and that's the folks in the prison system. And I think we as a culture tend to forget that, you know, these people are going to grow old and die there. And not everybody gets shanked. Not everybody is like on the TV, you know, where they're all buff and scary. And,
right.
They're going to get old. They're going to have disease like we have on the outside. And they're going to die, natural deaths in prison. And nobody cares. And it's really, I shouldn't say nobody, very few people care. And it's one of those things where, you know, oftentimes when I speak to groups or I'm out talking about this, people will say, well, but it's prisoners. You know, they get what they deserve.
Right,
or
right.
Who cares, you know. And what I tell people is there's two ways to look at it. And you can look at it the way I got into it, which is kind of the human and compassion side, and say, you know what? I am not the same person I was when I was 20, and I made lots of mistakes when I was 20. And I'd like to say I'm a better person. And you know what? We all do that. I think most people would say they're not the same person, and they made some mistakes along the way. And, you know, we don't show enough grace, both to ourselves and to others. So there's that compassionate component, but for those people who just look at me and say, Corey, they get what they deserve. You know, where was their compassion when they murdered somebody? Where
right,
was their compassion
right.
You know, and I get that. I absolutely do. But I don't feel like I was called to judge people like that. And so that's why I do what I do. But those people who don't care, the next thing I say, well, do you like money? And most people look at me and go, yeah, I like money. Well, let me tell you the research I've done through my PhD, and let me tell you how much these people who you hate, you just said you don't care about, how much they're going to cost you as they get old. And that's why when I talk about compassionate care in prison, whether you care because you are compassionate or you care because you love money, you need to hear what I have to say, because in the end, it hits both of those sectors and it works.
Hmm. Yeah. Teach me.
Well, you know, it's really interesting when I talk to people, because you do. And some of the nicest people are the ones that will say, I don't care about prisoners. Mm-hmm. They did wrong. That's what they deserve. And you know what? I don't judge those people either, because I don't know what they've been through. And maybe they've got some baggage that, you know, is informing their decisions. But I do feel like this is a group, and I've gone into the prisons. Like I said, did my PhD there. I had to go into prisons, do the research. I met people, and not everybody is a murderer. Not everybody is a violent criminal. And for many of them, they are different people. There are bad people in prison. Make no mistake. There are people who certainly deserve to be there. But I don't believe that whether you deserve to be there or not, that anybody deserves to die alone.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in prisons, at least those without hospices, and most prisons in the United States do not have a hospice. I will say in California, you're very lucky, because there is, in fact, that's where the first prison hospice started, was in California at the men's penal colony. But when you don't have a hospice, and prisoners are not given a choice, and this is kind of where the money piece comes in, we are, by regulation, we must care for these prisoners. We must give them health care.
Right.
We don't get to say, oh, you have ESRD, well, you can choose to die or not. We have to take care of you, no matter what. And people can live for a very long time, even getting the bare minimum health care.
Sure.
And so then we are paying for these people that some people don't care about for every trip to the emergency room,
mm-hmm.
all the extra guards that it takes for them to go to the emergency
sure.
room or to go to dialysis, which can be $7,000 to $14,000 per treatment.
Wow.
And people that go to dialysis go 3 to 4 times a week
right.
for the rest of their lives.
Right.
Right? So we're looking at, and let's face it, most folks that are in our prisons did not participate in their wellness program before they got to prison.
Yeah, that's invariably true. Yeah.
So, you know, they tend to be a little bit sicker. And your body, when you are in the prison, when you're incarcerated, your body ages 10 to 15 years faster than for non-incarcerated people.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing is, you know, what I consider young, 40, 50, 60-year-old people having diseases of 70, 80, 90-year-old people.
Mm-hmm.
And 70, 80, 90-year-old people not being able to function because their bodies are 80, 90, 100-year-old people. And yet we have to keep them alive, right? So by giving people an option, we are not only saving taxpayer money, but we are providing some dignity and some choice in their life, which for some they may never have had much in their lives. And then the amazing part about what I've done is all the other things that happen. So I can talk all day about the money we're going to save, how compassionate it is. But then there's the pieces that I can tell you about, but my words don't do them justice, and that's the experience. It's watching inmates who are spending their life in prison. They did something bad to be there for life. Change when you teach them how to care for each other.
Hmm.
And I'll give away this story because it's one of the most powerful stories I've ever experienced. But I did a couple TED Talks, and I tell this story in the TED Talk. And I'm not sure if anybody actually didn't cry. And it almost made me cry because I was looking at the audience and they were all crying.
Right.
But I had this beautiful experience of this man who was in prison for hate crimes. He was Caucasian. On his knuckles, he had the words white power tattooed. I mean, just if you could paint a white supremacist, this was this man. He was the quintessential white supremacist. And he was also a hospice volunteer. And one of the hospice patients was dying at the end of life, meaning a few hours or less. And I watched this white man go up to the black man. And we are in the South. We are in Angola prison in Louisiana. We are in the deep South. And I watched those white power hands pick up a cool cloth and wipe it on his face and hold this black man's hand. And very softly, he bent down to him and he said, "My friend, go home in love." And I was beyond myself to hear "go home in love" and watch him tenderly touch this dying man's head was beyond powerful. And for those people who think that everyone that's there deserves to be there, you know, maybe they're right, because sometimes we learn the hardest lessons in the hardest places. But in the end, the right thing happens. And I watched it. I've seen it so many times, so many lessons, so many things that I thought I would experience when I was, you know, visiting the prisons, going to prison. It's so funny, as a side note, whenever I say I'm going to prison, you should see the looks that I get. And people, my mom, when my mom was alive, would say, "Where's Corey today?" And she'd say, "She's in prison." But the things that I've learned going to prison are things that, you know, I grew up reading the Bible, being taught those beliefs and those ethics, and you hear them, but until you experience it, until you've gone behind the bars, until you've seen compassion in action, it's all just academic.
Yeah, I remember years ago, I've been a sports writer off and on most of my life, and I got asked to referee the annual football game between two cell blocks, I guess, for want of a better word, at the state prison in Vacaville, California, and had no idea what I was getting in for. I mean, none. And they had me come down the day before so I could go to practice and introduce myself and all that. And they gave me all the appropriate warnings, you know, and the guard towers are all around. And they said, you know, the last 3 years, this football game has not finished. it got into fights, and that was, you know, nothing real serious, but they called it off before it got more heated. But being able to talk to these guys and see, even in their situation, not all of them were lifers, but a lot of them were, and to see how important this football game was to them, and to talk to some of them and hear their you know, their life stories. Some were very contrite and admitted, and others felt like, you know, they'd been railroaded, and I didn't know the truth of their situations. But it was so many of them. It started out with drugs as teenagers, and they got into petty street crime, and then somebody ended up getting in a fight, and somebody died, or somebody got badly hurt, and suddenly it's a completely different ball game. They were part of the system at that point, and just could never get out of that cycle. They could get out of prison and couldn't get a job, and they'd fall back into the bad ways. And then now they got two strikes, now they got three strikes, and we're going to throw away the key. And it was very revealing to somebody from the outside who was used to covering football games in stadiums with guys that were in college, you know. And but the football game still mattered to them. You know, it was something for them to hold on to. And I left that experience. I was partly glad to leave that experience alive, but I left that experience with a completely different view you see the number of people who are in prison and the percent of the population and all the demographics of it. And it sometimes becomes just a bunch of numbers. And I was never one of those, you know, they're getting what they deserve and throw away the key. But by the same token, I didn't have a face to them. And now I had a face and realized that they had a heart and they had a soul. And they had at one point had a family. And probably when they were 8 year old, dreamed about playing in the major leagues like I dreamed about playing in the major leagues, you know. And then that dream went away somehow. And it just gave me and when I heard we were going to talk, I thought this is something that I'd really like to explore. I know that the Catholic Church, of course, has a tremendous prison ministry, a lot of deacons and priests and stuff. It's very big. I know our Bishop Soto here is very big on prison ministry as well, personally. And it's so important. But I didn't know about hospice in prison. Are you saying that not only, like in California, we have hospice by law, but a lot of the prisoners actually participate as hospice volunteers?
Yes. Typically, in a prison-run hospice, the volunteers, the people who do death watches, who sit with the dying, the people who read to them, the people who assist in just changing their, you know, their bed clothes and changing their beds, they are all inmates.
Wow.
Because to bring somebody in would be quite a big deal.
Right.
You know, anybody that goes in, like for prison ministries, you have to get, you know, you have all kinds of hoops you need to jump through.
Exactly.
But just to bring a kind-hearted person in, no matter how kind-hearted they are, is quite a task.
Right.
To get them into a prison. So when prison hospices first began, it was like, well, who do we have here? Well, you know, if we vet them properly and teach them how to be volunteers, they're the perfect volunteer because they're there 24/7. They can create this family feeling because they're there all the time.
Sure.
And it does wonders for them. One of the things that I do when I do consult is I teach inmates how to care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been moments that have just blown my mind when I'm teaching 40, 50-year-old men the difference between good touch and bad touch.
Hmm.
And I think, okay, are you telling me you didn't learn this when you were 3? Or 5? And, you know, I grew up in such a functional, wonderful family that I can't fathom not having that. I know it's out there. And I've seen so many unfortunate examples of it. But it's true. We take for granted, for those of us who have had good upbringings, that, you know, there's so many out there that don't. And thank goodness there's so many out there that may not but don't end up in prison. But for a majority of the folks who end up in prison, one of the things they will tell you is they had a rough home life.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's many that say, "No, my mom loves me," and you know, and you see it on TV, you know, families going. But those are not the norm. And what we see or what we think we know about prisons, good or bad, is not necessarily the norm. And it's really amazing the amount of humanity and care that occurs in a prison when the inmates know you are there to help them. It was so funny when I was in Angola, I was getting ready to leave for the day, and, you know, I'm really literally in the middle of the prison compound behind, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles of rows of razor wire and walls. And one of the inmates said to me, one of the hospice volunteers said, "Well, ma'am, where are you going to go eat tonight?" And so I told him, I looked up this place, I'm going to go there. And he said, "Oh, Miss Corey, that's a really dangerous place.
Wow.
I wouldn't go there. I thought, I'm standing in the middle of Angola State Prison, and you're telling me I'm going to a dangerous place? But heck, if an inmate at Angola told me don't go there, it's dangerous, I was not about to go there.
Right.
But, you know, it's amazing how when they realized I was there to help them not die alone, which is one of the biggest fears they have going into prison. That's one of the things that my research told me is it's not about getting shanked or raped or, I mean, that is a fear. But over 85% of the people I talked to said their greatest fear going into prison was dying alone, dying in prison.
Wow.
That's a horrible thing. I mean, you ask people outside of prison, and they'll tell you they're afraid to die alone.
Sure, sure.
That's not something most people aim to do. You know, we think of death as being surrounded by our loved ones or things that we care about. We don't think about it being, you know, in four walls with, you know, no comfy cushions and no couch and no TV on the wall and no, you know, what. It's literally you're in a prison cell with a mattress. And if you are lucky and they have a decent infirmary that you can stay in, you might be in the infirmary, which is like a not great hospital. And most people don't say they don't want to die in the hospital either. And so all these things that we don't want to do on the outside is really what happens on the inside. And so there is a real concern, and it's founded in not wanting to die alone in prison. I mean, there's a stigma there. There's, you know, there's just the thought of what happens if nobody claims your body in prison as a ward of the state. They will literally put you in a pine box and bury you. And it could be bury you out in the North 40. There's not necessarily a beautiful cemetery or, you know, whatever. Now it's getting better. I will say, since I was at Angola, they have a beautiful, beautiful death ritual that they have created because one of their wardens, Burl Kane, created it and allowed it to happen. And what it did to that prison is it changed that prison from one of the most dangerous prisons that I know. My mother, who grew up in the 50s, used to say, "Ooh, I've heard of Angola. It feels like I'm sending my 4'10" daughter there. Are you kidding me?" but it's different because they were allowed to be taught to care for each other. They were allowed to be human. And compassion and grace was given to them. And they were allowed find who they were. And now, in the woodworking shop, one of the things they make is coffins, some of the most beautiful coffins I've ever seen in my life. And I believe Billy Graham was buried in an Angola coffin.
Really?
I think so. I kind of remember when he passed hearing that because he, you know, he had been there and he saw it. And, I mean, they make beautiful, they have a horse-drawn carriage that pulls the coffin or carries the coffin, drawn by two Pershawn horses, giant, you know, beautiful horses, a black one and a white one, because of the unity. It's pulled by an inmate named Mr. Bones, and that is his real name. Like, I was like, no, he just goes by Bones. And they were like, no, that's his real name. And he drives that, and the prison family, whoever they are, the people that they got close to, walk behind the casket. And, you know, people go, wow, you know, walking behind a casket, that's you know, a big deal. It's an even bigger deal when you consider they are in Louisiana. Their prison uniform is not shorts. It's jeans and usually long sleeve shirts of some sort. And they will walk over 2 miles with that casket to where they bury their dead.
Wow.
That is commitment.
So what was the name of the warden again?
Burl Kane. C-A-I-N, and he wrote, or somebody wrote, I can't remember if he wrote it, a book called Kane's Redemption, and it is all about what Warden Kane did. And, you know, he started a rodeo. It's funny you mentioned the football game at Vacaville. He started a rodeo, and it's still going on, you know, now, and he retired, I want to say recently, but maybe 10 years, 5, 10 years. So this isn't like it was, you know, in the 1800s or a long, long time ago. You know, he just recently retired. He was the warden when I did my work there, and he made a difference. And, you know, what that tells me is it takes one person,
mm-hmm.
one person with the right heart in the right place that can do the right thing. And that's honestly what spurred me on to do what I do, and that's, you know, to advocate, to talk to people, to get people to consider who they are compassionate about, because we all like to say we're compassionate, right? I don't think if you ask any of your listeners, are you all, who's not compassionate? I don't think you'd get many hands raised. You know, people are compassionate and like to think they're compassionate. But my question is always, but there's always an asterisk, right? The little star that goes behind the word, the asterisk. Because who are you compassionate to? We tend to be compassionate to the people who we love,
mm-hmm.
who make us look good, who we know, who, you know, what. But what about the people who, for all intents and purposes, who Christ loved, right?
Right.
What about the tax collectors? What about the dirty people? What about the homeless people? What about the people who smell funny? What about the people who are beggars? What about the people in prison? I want to say that many of us have compassion for those people, but where does your compassion end? And I always challenge people, who are you compassionate to? And it's okay to say, I'm not compassionate to those people. I mean, that's all right. You know yourself, and there's nothing wrong with that. But before we raise the compassion flag and pat ourselves on the back, let's think about who are those people that we might pretend we don't see, or we don't like to talk about, or we don't want to go to prison ministry because we don't like the prisons, or we don't want to go to a nursing home because they smell funny, or we don't want to, you know, whatever. We can make up a million reasons, but all of us have that asterisk. And so, you know, who is it? And then how do you overcome that asterisk? How do you take that footnote out of your life?
Corey, we are against the clock here. We would love to get you back on.
Absolutely.
And maybe
I can obviously talk about this.
maybe talk specifically about prisons in California as well.
Yes,
and if you're willing to come back on, we would love to talk to you again. It's you're doing the Lord's work.
Well, I'm doing it because He did it in me first.
Yeah. Yep.
He did it for me first. So now it's what can I do to give back?
So well said. Thanks so much for joining us. We will be in touch, and thanks for all you do to make this a better world.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Corey. God bless. That's Corey Novak, who is Dr. Corey Novak. And just, you know, prison ministry, I've spent, not again, and I haven't been a prisoner, but I have spent time in prisons, and not as prison ministry, but as part of my education, and those are real human beings, and they're all made in the image and likeness of God, and so good for the people that are able to show compassion to them. And I didn't know that they had hospice as well, and that's good to know as well, and that's pretty compelling stories. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love. is a red light.